Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you gotta do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. Good evening, America, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Just the News, No Noise. I'm your host, John Solomon, reporting to you from Washington, D.C. My amazing co-host, Amanda Head, she's off tonight breaking some wishbones with her family, and that's great because we have an amazing show planned for everyone tuning in this evening. Over the course of the last few months, I've had the privilege of interviewing several of the top GOP presidential candidates. Tonight, you're going to get to see all of them, starting with former President Donald Trump. Then we're going to talk to Vivek Ramaswamy, the businessman, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, North Dakota Governor Ron Burgum, and of course, former U.N. Ambassador and former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. That's how we're going to kick off tonight. You're going to hear their policies, some common themes about what they have for the country. And we're going to start off in Mar-a-Lago with a recent interview I did with AMAC's Rebecca Weber with President Trump.
Mr. President, thank you again for being with us today. I want to talk about the border, something very concerning to AMAC members and Americans. Some reports by agents and reporters are telling us that over 200,000 illegal aliens crossed the border last month alone. Now, during your presidency, you took unprecedented action, declaring it a national emergency. You built 500 miles of a wall. What additional steps will you take in a second term, to secure the border and prevent what we're seeing?
So I had a lot of things. Number one, we built a tremendous amount of wall, and we got Mexico. When I say Mexico to pay, they paid much more. Mexico paid for a lot of it in the sense that we got 28,000 soldiers from Mexico free of charge. Now, wasn't that easy? I told them, if you don't do it, we're going to have to tariff all your products coming into the United States. And they said, we would love to do it. But they gave us 28,000 soldiers. That was a big thing. We're the safest border in history. We also ended the catch and release in the United States. We had catch and release, but it was into Mexico. Catch and release is a disaster where they catch somebody. It can be a convicted horror show. And we release them. And they say, come back in 5 years for a trial. Nobody ever comes back. So we ended that. We had a stay in Mexico policy that nobody thought we could get. And we just had more than anything else, we built 561, they said 450, but it's 561 miles of wall. We were going to add another 200. I said we're going to do 400. We did 561. We're going to add another 200. And this is fighting McConnell and Paul Rhino. Okay, I got to fight Rhino, and I had to fight McConnell. And probably just as hard as I had to fight Nancy Pelosi in many ways. It was terrible. But we took it out of the military. The military has been great because I considered it an invasion into our country. And we built all of that while we were ready to do another 200 miles. It was all bought. You saw the steel. It's all over the place. Now I heard they were selling it for 10 cents on the dollar. And it's perfect. You know, it's exactly what the Border Patrol. I went to the Border Patrol. I thought we'd have concrete plank 40 or 50 or 60 feet high, like on a parking garage, concrete plank. They said, sir, it's no good. It doesn't work because you have to be able to see through it. We need steel, as opposed to concrete. We actually need both. And we designed a wall that they wanted. I didn't want to have any excuses. So it's steel, concrete, and rebar. And on top, we had an anti-climb thing, a piece of steel, which is anti-climb. And we had mountain climbers come in and try and climb. And we actually had people that deal with drugs come in and try and climb it. and it was the hardest one to do. It was great. So we built it, and then we had a terrible, terrible thing happen in the election. We were going to add 200 miles. It was all bought. It would have taken 3 weeks to put up. And instead of 3 weeks to put up, they actually took it away, and some of it has been just stolen, gone. And you can imagine the best wall you can buy, the most expensive stuff you can buy. And it's been stolen in a lot of cases, and it's been taken away. So they now say we're going to build 20 miles. The problem with 20 miles, it's nothing. 20 miles is nothing. There are certain areas. The reason I added 200 is because when you did the 561 miles, all of a sudden, you know, it's like water. All of a sudden, there are other places that didn't have a problem, but now all of a sudden they have a problem. So we're going to have that done in a period of 3 weeks. Everything was built. Everything was done. The hard part was done. All we had to do is place it. And that was getting ready to be done. And then we had that ridiculous result in the election. And it just sat there. And now I hear they sold a lot of it for a very small amount of money. Mm-hmm. Now they say we're going to build it, but they're only going to build 20 miles. And they probably won't even build that. These contractors must have made a fortune. They'll get more money for not building the wall. They say, what do you mean? I mean, I know the contractor world. They'll say, what do you mean? We spent all this money to get it ready. We need much more money not to build it than to build it. That's what they do. And yeah. I guarantee there's nobody in Biden's group that's negotiating. I hear they made a fortune. And it's too bad. We would have had 750 miles of wall. But we have five. We have a tremendous amount. We built a lot. And that's what gave us the safety. And also Mexico was great. You know, the president of Mexico, really, he's a socialist, but you can't have everything. And we got along great. He's a fantastic man. And he gave us 28,000 soldiers. And we had the best border. And now you have the worst border, I think, in history.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sir, you talked about negotiating from a position of strength, which you've done your whole career.
You have to.
Republicans are going to, after they get through the speaker battle, they're going to have to get a budget deal in place. What advice would you give them to get something like on the border, get something on spending cuts? What advice do you have for them?
So I like Kevin a lot, but I disagreed with him so much on two things, debt ceiling, most of all, and this recent border, and it is sort of a border disaster because they should have had that and they didn't have that taken care of.
They could have had it.
But the recent budget disaster. And I said, Kevin, this is the president's situation. This isn't you. Whoever's, I don't mean Biden, because Biden, I don't even think he knows what's going on. I think this is the president's, whoever president is, it's not yours. And Kevin worked so hard. And in all fairness, in one sense, you have to respect it. In another sense, I thought it was not the right thing to do. Let them solve their problems. And I really thought we'd have a close-up, and after the close-up, we'd negotiate a great deal. But you didn't have that. Kevin wanted to keep it open, and he said, we will not let our country close. I said, Kevin, I think it's wonderful what you're saying, but this is really whoever president is, this is the president's problem, not your problem. And you would have been, you said negotiate from strength, you would have been negotiating from strength. And all of a sudden, they announced out of the wind, they announced that they have a deal. And I won't soon forget the picture of Chuck Schumer jumping up and down, high-fiving everybody, because it was a big victory for them. They solved the problem for Biden. And I don't mind doing that if we get something good for the country. I want to do that. Look, you know, I said it the other day to somebody that was shocked. I wish Biden were doing a great job, even though that would be very hard politically, as opposed to the worst job. He's the worst president in history, the most corrupt president in history. A most incompetent president by far. There's no, he can't even get off a stage, can't put two sentences together. But I wish he was doing a phenomenal job, even if it meant that, you know, most likely you wouldn't be elected or whatever. But he's doing the worst job in the history of our country. You talk about the border, you talk about anything, talk about Afghanistan. There's never been a more embarrassing period of time in our country's history than what took place in Afghanistan. And there was no reason for that. You don't take the military out first. And, you know, it's so sad to see, but I would have much preferred. Kevin is a very good man, and he did something very, he meant to do well, but nothing was gained by, you know, they gave an extension, but nothing was gotten for either Republicans or for, frankly, the country by doing that. And I think people were ready to really start negotiating and negotiating hard. And they thought it would close for a period of time. It closes. The big one was the debt ceiling, though. We could have gotten everything. We could have solved the problems of this country with debt ceiling. And instead, Mitch McConnell, who's one of the worst Republicans in history, he is so bad. He's so bad. He's so, you can't say he's stupid, but essentially he uses campaign financing to get senators on his side. Okay, so I don't know. Do you call that leadership? I don't know. But what he's done is so horrible. So they got debt ceiling transferred into my administration. Thank you very much. And we could have gotten everything with debt ceiling. That was bigger, much bigger than when we're talking about the budget, much bigger. That was budget times 20. And that was blown. These are the worst negotiators I've ever seen. I've never seen negotiators like this. They get nothing. And I told Kevin, I said, if you do this, I believe you're going to lose your speakership. And in all fairness to him, he wanted to do what he thought was the right thing. And I personally think he played right into the Democrats' hands. But he lost his speakership over it.
That's amazing.
Mr. President, currently Social Security is on track to be insolvent in 2033, which means that seniors would see a 23% cut in their benefits.
Yeah.
So, as president, what action might you take to help preserve and protect Social Security?
We have a country that's potentially very rich. It's very poor right now because we're very stupid. If you look at Saudi Arabia, some of the oil-producing nations, they're the richest nations. We have more oil than they do. Oil and gas. We have more than anybody. We have, if you look at the top of those big oil wells, you see those big fire flames. That's stuff that we're throwing away. That's gas. We're throwing it away. We're burning it. We have it free. We have more than any other nation. And then we had Anwar that I got approved that Ronald Reagan couldn't get approved. Nobody could get it approved. The biggest in the world, as big as Saudi Arabia, maybe a big, maybe bigger in Alaska. And Biden threw it away. I got it done. I was so happy with that. Nobody said it could be. Nobody thought it could be done. I got it done. Think of it, probably bigger than Saudi Arabia. And we, the bottom line, we have more than any other country in the world. And we started off in third place. And by the time I finished, we were in first place by a lot. And we were going to be energy dominant. We were energy. I tell you, we were totally independent on energy. Right. We didn't need anybody's energy. We didn't have to give them arms or armies, or we didn't have to guard anybody. We didn't have to keep gulfs open. Yeah. We were totally set, and we were going, I would say within 6 months, we would have been dominant. We were going to supply the oil and gas for Europe, little things like that. We were going to supply it for everybody. We had so much, and we had the best extraction. We had the best of everything. And we would have made so much money that Social Security and other things would have been able to be taken care of. If you look at the balance sheet of Saudi Arabia and some of these countries, and you say, do you have debt? They look at you, they don't know what the word debt means. What do you mean debt? When they buy 200 Boeing 777s, I once said, how do you finance that? How do you? They looked at me like, finance? We have more than anybody. And we were going to be dominant to a level that nobody's ever seen before. We were going to make so much money, and we were going to start paying down debt, and we were going to take care of Social Security. The one thing I won't stand for people paying more. You know, Ron DeSanctimonious wants to raise everybody's Social Security. He wants to raise the minimum age to 70, and he wants to screw around with Medicare. You can't do that because there are so many other ways of doing it. But with energy, we have more than anybody else. And all of this fake energy that they talk about, the Green New Deal stuff, the Green New Deal is the destruction of our country. That's what, every time you hear that, think about the destruction of our country. You know, wind is about 50 times more expensive per kilowatt hour. There's many ways of measuring it, but the bottom line, it's much, much more expensive. If you take a natural gas, which is very clean, and if you look at it at 3 cents, you could look at wind at about 50 cents. That's where you are. And that's like unacceptable. And, you know, Germany tried. They tried. Angela was, she tried two big experiments, let 2 million people into our country. That didn't work out too well. And the other one was she wanted to go all green. So they closed all the coal plants and they stopped even their nuclear plants. Right. And they went green for a little while and they were going to go out of business in about 2 minutes. And now they're building coal plants all over the place. China's building a coal plant every 4 days. And here we are talking about nonsense that doesn't have the power or the technology to fire up our big factories and plants. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very expensive. So it's going to go away. We have more of, you know, when you talk about cars, they want to go all electric, but we have gasoline. We have more gasoline than anybody's ever had. Yeah. And yet they don't want to make gasoline cars. They want to make all electric cars. And I was in Michigan a week ago. Yep. I met with the United Auto Market workers, and these are unbelievable people. We were packed. You saw thousands and thousands of people.
Live,
it was supposed to be a little small meeting,
right,
talking to some of the leadership. And now I see they're going exactly with what I'm saying. I said, your problem isn't what you're getting per hour. You're not going to have a job in 2 years because every electric vehicle is going to be made in China or someplace else, but not here,
right,
but mostly China. I said, so your problem, don't worry about how much they're paying you an hour. Worry about where you're going to be working in 2 years because you're not going to be making automobiles. And I noticed that now is their theme.
Yeah.
So I did a good job. Yeah. But I think we're going to get, I don't know if we're going to get union support at the top, but I guarantee almost every auto worker is going to be voting for Trump because we're going to reinvigorate our automobile business. And we're going to have electric cars, but we're going to have gasoline-fueled cars. We're going to have gasoline. We're going to have hybrids. We're going to have everything. Mm-hmm. They want to take our trucks and make them all electric. But the problem is they don't work. The batteries are too big. You can't store them. They're not strong enough.
Right.
It's not strong enough. And they can't go far enough. Same thing as a car. An electric car can't go far enough. Maybe someday they will, but right now they can't. And they cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I had great meetings with the auto workers. And I think we're going to win Michigan. And I think we're going to bring back tremendous numbers of jobs. If I'm elected, if Biden's elected, you're not going to have any automobile manufacturing business. It's gone. And I don't know Sean Fain. I don't know. I never met him.
Right.
But I will tell you, he's doing a tremendous disservice to his people by not endorsing Trump. Now, he hasn't endorsed Biden, but
right,
for 700 years, they've been endorsing a Democrat. That's all they endorse is a Democrat. But this Democrat and this group of radical left lunatics, they're going to put the automobile business, it's gone. So is the trucking business. So is everything gone. We're not going to manufacture trucks here anymore. We're not going to manufacture anything. They even want to turn our army tanks into electric, even though they don't work properly and they don't go far enough. And nobody knows where they store the batteries. You know, the batteries are massive.
Yeah, they are.
What, maybe they'll build something on the back of it to carry these. The batteries are bigger than the tank,
yeah,
but they want to make army tanks that are all electric.
Yeah.
These people are crazy, John. These people are crazy. Think of it. They want an all electric tank. So you can take this tank into a hostile area and bomb the hell out of everyone. Shoot the hell, knock everything down. But you're doing it an environmentally friendly way. No fumes. There's no fumes.
Yeah, there's no fumes.
We're doing. The problem is it won't go far,
yeah,
and you can't charge it.
Can't stop or recharge.
These people are such crazy people. They're destroying our country.
Wow, what a substantive interview. One of my favorites I've done with President Trump. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but don't go anywhere. Go get a piece of pumpkin pie. Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador, is up next. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving day. First, you got a feast of food. Now a little food for thought with these interviews with the great presidential candidates. I'm so thankful for my family, my health, my friends, and also the opportunity to do this job right here on Real America's Voice. Next up, former UN ambassador Nikki Haley. Take a listen. Joining us right now, former UN ambassador Nikki Haley. Madam Ambassador, great to have you here today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the launch of your campaign. A lot of buzz about it. Some really big ideas already coming out of the campaign, starting with the idea it's time to review our foreign aid, realign it with our values. How's the reaction been today?
You know, it started in the United Nations after we had the vote of moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and the United States was heavily condemned. I went back to my staff and I said, I want you to put a book together. I want you to list all 193 countries. The second column should be the percentage of times they vote with us and against us. And the third column should be how much foreign aid we give them. And I took that book and I gave it to President Trump, and he lost his mind. He's flipping pages, calling out countries. And I said that what I'm trying to tell you is it's not that we give aid based on a percentage vote, but we need to be smart about how we give aid. We gave $46 billion in foreign aid last year. We're giving money assuming we can buy friends. You can't buy friends. Stop giving money to countries that say death to America. We gave it to Iraq, where they sit there and hold hands with the Iranian terrorists that are saying that. Pakistan, that used to harbor terrorists that would kill our soldiers. Communist China, communist Cuba. Zimbabwe, the most anti-American country at the United Nations. Why are we doing that? Let's focus on our friends and our allies and stop giving money to countries just because it's a weak look that we do it. Think about what that says to China, that mm-hmm. we're giving them money for their environment. Right. It's ludicrous. As president, I'll stop all of that.
And it seems to be that in those instances, there are no goals. There's no end point. And so I wanted to ask you about, you know, you've been very supportive of our involvement in Ukraine. And for a lot of people, they look at that and they say, why are we spending money there? And the Biden administration has had a very hard time defining what that goal is. What's the victory there? What do you think the victory looks like?
It's not a war for Ukraine. It's a war about freedom. And it's a war we have to win. I don't think we need to send money to Ukraine. I don't think we need to send troops to Ukraine. I think we need to work with our allies to give them the ammunition and equipment to win. If we win this war in Ukraine, it sends a message to Russia, China, Iran, and every enemy that wants to hurt the West and kill freedom. If we lose this, then we need to believe dictators and take them at their word. Russia has said Poland and the Baltics are next. It would go into a world war. We're trying to prevent war. So what we need to do now is make sure we give Ukraine everything they need to win. And when they do that, that's when freedom will win again.
And you have a confidence that we can do that. We can arm the Ukrainians and they can pull this off. You, I think you're a little skeptical when Janet Yellen goes over and says, we're going to do all the nation building for you, too. That's not in your baby.
No, you don't want to get into nation building. What you want to make sure, and it's a lot, look at what the Ukrainians are doing on their own. I mean, Russia has fallen so far when they're getting drones from Iran and missiles from North Korea. They've raised the draft age to 65. Hundreds of thousands of Russians have left that country. Putin knows he's starting to lose. What I wish is Biden would have acted sooner. That was the key. And this all started with Obama when he did nothing when they moved into Crimea in the first place. A strong America prevents wars. And you do that with a strong military. You do it by having the backs of your friends. And you do it by adding more alliances with you and getting other countries to help as well.
That's right. Okay, speaking of military action, Mexico, our southern border, that's the tip of the spear. But we have seen this growing surge of fentanyl coming across our border. Last year, it was nearly 14,000 pounds, and now it's just barely March, and we are almost at that level. Like I said, Mexico is the tip of the spear, but it comes from China. Do you support military action for the war on fentanyl?
Well, I think, first of all, you made the right point. It's coming from China. We need to start making China pay for what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing and why they're sending it over. And the way you do that is you secure the border. Let's secure the border. Let's go back to remain in Mexico. Let's stop catch and release. But let's go a step further. Do what we did in South Carolina. We passed an Arizona-style E-Verify program that said, any business that hired someone, they had to be legal. And if they didn't, they were punished. Let's stop giving illegal immigrants jobs. Let's stop giving illegal immigrants money. And let's start focusing on our own citizens. That's when they'll stop coming. They stopped coming to South Carolina because they knew they couldn't get a job.
Right.
They'll stop trying to cross the border when they know they can no longer get money or a job.
Mm. Take away the incentive, take away the bad behavior. That's such a simple word. It always works in politics and policy. I want to talk a little bit about China a little bit more. It is clearly the dominant threat of the future. We Republicans like you have been in the leadership on this for a long time, but more recently we're seeing Democrats, maybe because Nancy Pelosi's thumb is off the scale, joining Republicans saying, we agree with you. There's a problem here. China-proofing this economy is going to be a big task. How would you go about doing that?
Well, I think you first acknowledge that China is our number one national security threat, and you should look at it from a national security perspective. With the economy, I don't care if Americans buy T-shirts and light bulbs from China any more than I care if China buys our agricultural products. But let's look at the national security items. Mm-hmm. When we had COVID and everybody wanted you to put on a mask, the masks were made in China. When they wanted you to take a COVID test, the COVID tests were made in China. When you have to get medications, your medications are from China. Look at where the national security threats are and let's tackle that first. But let's do it from an entire look at China. They're building up their military. They have the largest naval fleet in the world. They have more air defense systems than we do. They are buying up thousands of acres of farmland, which we should put a stop at immediately. 350,000 acres, most recently near Grand Forks Air Force Base, mm-hmm. where our most sensitive drone technology is. Then you go and you look at the fact that they are continuing to kind of add and be total friends with Russia. Iran is their junior partner. Let's call them out on all the intellectual property that they're stealing. Let's build our military. Let's go to our colleges and universities and say, you either take Chinese money, you take American money, but you don't get both. Let's make that stop and let's put an end to it. And for God's sake, we can never, ever have Americans look to the sky and see a Chinese spy balloon looking back at us. That was a national embarrassment, but it showed the arrogance of China and it showed their seriousness. Let's hold them accountable for COVID. Let's hold them accountable for the fentanyl that's coming across, and let's let them know what we expect of them instead of being reactive. When we do that, that's when we'll start to see them take shape.
Wow, wasn't that awesome? Did you notice the binder that Ambassador Haley had on all the UN countries who voted against the United States? That's preparation. Great interview, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Next up, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He's got a lot to say, starting with what he's done in his state. We'll have that right after these messages. Angie's List is now Angie, A-N-G-I, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project is, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. That's what you want, right? I'm thinking about building out my basement in my cabin. I've been perusing Angie, looking for just the right contractor to get it done the way my wife and I want it done. Now, Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and right in your neighborhood. That's important, right? You can do comparative shopping. Get started today at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Angie.com or the Angie app. Go check it out today.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back, American. Happy Thanksgiving. Hey, if you're looking for Amanda Head, don't worry. She's with her family today. She'll be back tomorrow with regular programming on Friday. But we're going to turn to another one of our interviews, this time with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. A lot of substance, particularly when it comes to China-proofing our economy. Listen to this. But I want to start on foreign policy, a place where you have had a lot of track record. You served. You've talked a lot about the differences in how you would approach national security compared to some of the other people on the stage with this Israel moment now. You were out there yesterday or 2 days ago getting Israelis back to the United States when the Biden administration failed to have a rescue plan. Meanwhile, our Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, he was talking about, well, maybe we should get an aid package to Palestinians. Are the values misaligned in the Biden administration?
It's just unbelievable. So when the attack happens, obviously a major event, Florida, we've got a lot of Floridians that go over to Israel. We've got very close ties, but between Florida and Israel. So I knew that this was something that was going to impact our state directly. And I was really, quite frankly, shocked at how little the embassy and the State Department was doing in the days after to help the people who were stranded or caught in harm's way. So last week we did an executive order where I scrambled our emergency response resources in Florida, and we arranged to launch flights from Israel so that we can bring Floridians and other Americans back to the state of Florida. So we ended up on Sunday night, we did 271 passengers. The interesting thing about that, 91 of those were children. You had some families, five or six children, that were kind of caught in this. So they were very, very thankful. We'll do many hundreds more in the ensuing days. But, you know, the thing about it is what the State Department finally said they would do, well, they could take you to Cyprus or they could take you and dump you in Greece, but then they're going to send you a bill for that. And I'm just thinking to myself, okay, first of all, what are these people going to do in Greece? A lot of them have they don't know anything about Greece. They want to get home. But second of all, if you're an illegal alien, you come across that border, they will fly you around at no charge to the illegal alien. They will put that on the U.S. taxpayer. They'll put illegal aliens up in nice hotels at the cost of the U.S. taxpayer, and they don't charge the illegal alien. Yet, leaving a war zone, our own citizens, they're sticking them with the bill. So it shows you just how this administration thinks. And then now for their main priority to be sink taxpayer money into the Gaza Strip. And they claim it's, quote, humanitarian assistance. But we know Hamas runs the show down there. You are aiding Hamas when you're sending tax dollars down there. So I've been very clear over the last week. First, no Gaza refugees in the United States. And second, no taxpayer money to Gaza. They still have people that are being held hostage. Our own people, U.S. citizens, are being held hostage. A lot of Israelis, of course, are being held hostage. Why would you want to pump money into the coffers of the Hamas organization, which any money that goes down there, any of those groups, will all get commandeered by Hamas? So the administration's really flailing around. I mean, they didn't even wake Biden up on the morning that this happened. He slept in, didn't take the 2 a.m. phone call like a president needs to do. He was missing in action through most of the next few days. And he came out earlier in the week saying, we're going to stand with Israel. They have a right to fight this evil. But behind the scenes now, they're kneecapping Israel's ability to fight back. They don't want to see Israel completely eradicate Hamas. And it's clear in their actions behind the scenes that that's what they're trying to avoid. But the only way this thing eventually ends is the complete destruction of Hamas. If you just go in there and do some volleys and you wound Hamas, they're going to come back and they're going to do this again.
Sir, you have brought a lot of accountability to state government in Florida. You fire people that don't follow the law. You have reined in spending. The federal bureaucracy is a monstrosity, as you remember when you were in Congress. What are some of your thoughts on reshaping it, resizing it, shrinking it down? Do you have some agencies in mind that you might just put on the chopping block?
Department of Education, that would be one that I would love to be able to sign legislation to sunset that. Energy, commerce. I mean, look, I think we can go as far as the Congress wants to go on some of that. Clearly, agencies like education have not worked since they were created in the late 1970s. And we understand education should be a state and local issue. One of the things I'm going to do is every cabinet secretary is going to be ordered to reduce their footprint of bureaucrats in DC area by 50%. Some of that will be reducing the total number of employees writ large in the agency through attrition. Some of it may be laying off. Some of it may be transferring to other parts of the country. But we've had this massive accumulation of power in DC, and it's been really, really toxic. So we want to take power out of DC, shift it around the country. The other thing is we're going to take 50,000 employees who are involved in policy, recategorize them as Schedule F. They will be able to be terminated at will without regard to civil service. And so that will give the president the ability to really ensure that the bureaucracy isn't kneecapping our agenda. I do think the president has Article 2 power to more forcefully discipline and fire federal employees. It's one thing to have those protections if, like, you have a supervisor in the Department of Agriculture, that you have certain protections. But the president is the one that gets the electoral votes. President's the one that has executive power. If you're not doing the job, you know, you should be held accountable. So we're going to be asserting Article 2 power in ways that I think this current Supreme Court would find agreeable. And that would reshift the balance away from the permanent bureaucracy back to the elected president. At the end of the day, the founding fathers created three branches of government: legislative, executive, judicial. They did not create a fourth branch of government. They did not create an administrative state that basically governs us without our consent and regardless of the outcome of elections. They imposed their will on us. That needs to end, and we need to reconstitutionalize this government. I'll be somebody that will be leaning in on this for day one. But I also understand these guys are not going to give up power willingly. They've accumulated a lot of power over many, many decades. To go in there and tame this beast, you got to be focused. You got to be disciplined. You got to have a cadre of people surrounding you that can serve in government by the hundreds, if not by the thousands. And you got to know that this is going to be a daily battle, day after day, for not just 4 years, but really for full two-term, eight-year presidency. And I think anything short of that, we're not going to get the job done. So I understand constitutional authority. I'm willing to use the levers of power. I showed that in Florida by making really strong decisions in ways that previous governors had not been willing to do. And we'll do the same thing as president.
Wow, what a great interview. I left thinking, you know, Ron DeSantis is making a pretty convincing case. I want to make America Florida. A lot of people, I think, who moved to Florida would say, hey, that's a good idea. All right, don't go anywhere. The newest can't enter into politics. Vivek Ramaswamy has made a stir on the debate stage. You're going to see why in this next interview. But first, a few commercial messages.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All All right, folks, welcome back to our Thanksgiving edition of Just the News, No Noise. What an honor it is to have you all here with me tonight. Thank you so much. I'm thankful for all of the great audience in this network, and particularly to my colleagues at Real America's Voice. I'm also grateful that a little while ago I got to meet Vivek Ramaswamy and interview him for the first time. You're going to get a sense of how fast he is on his feet. Just listen to this interview. A lot of people are excited about where we're headed, and I think one of the first things that we're going through, we're learning all the failures that occurred during COVID-19, during the pandemic. I think a lot of people want to know, how will you rewire the public health system? How will you restore confidence in the government institutions that let us down during the pandemic?
I think one of the first basic principles, the next time we face something like this, and I hope we never do again, but we have to be prepared to learn the lessons, is no restrictions on speech. That's the first thing. If we had been allowed to debate the merits of those lockdowns, we would not have locked down those schools and those cities. If we had been allowed to debate the merits of those vaccine mandates, I think we can now say with confidence that those vaccines would not have been mandated and we would have surfaced many of the side effects and risks earlier. So the path to truth runs through free speech, especially in times of so-called emergency. That's the first lesson. And the second lesson is that individual choice always governs. Give people the information, let them make the decisions for themselves. From masks to vaccines to whether or not they shop or send their kids to schools, that decision should belong to the people. It should never be made a centralized decision in government. And I think one of the important things we have to also learn is there were actors in our own government that broke the law, that likely broke the law. When you think about funding for the origin of the pandemic through research in a lab in Wuhan, all the way to other special interests whose, really, I think, tentacles were in this process, we have to have accountability, or else we can expect even worse in the future. That's how I'm going to lead as Commander-in-Chief.
Excellent, Vivek. Thanks again for being here. Speaking of accountability, I want to talk a little bit about Social Security. You have said, quote, Social Security reform, Medicare reform, that's got to be somebody else's job down the line. What is your response to voters who are concerned by the reality that Social Security will run out of money and Medicare in 10 years, that is, and Medicare even sooner?
Well, to be very clear, what I have said is no Social Security cuts or Medicare cuts for seniors. Full stop, and we're going to hold our word on that. But I have a much clearer path for how we actually address our $33 trillion national debt problem. It's going to take a CEO in the White House to do it. I've built multi-billion dollar companies as a CEO. I'm a young person from the next generation that's going to be affected by this crisis. And I'm serious about addressing it with zero-based budgeting. That's how many companies are well-run. I've taken similar approaches in the companies that I've built. Start with zero as the baseline and then ask what's actually necessary instead of just using last year's budget as the default. That's the problem in Washington, D.C. It's the problem in states across this union, too. Yes, Democrat states get it wrong, but there isn't even a single red state that does it this way. That's how I'm going to do it in Washington, D.C. Start with zero as the baseline. And what we'll learn is we'll have a 75% headcount reduction in the bureaucrats in this town in Washington, D.C. We will shut down redundant government agencies that should not exist. Combine that with my energy policies. Drill, frack, burn coal, embrace nuclear energy. Use the wealth underneath the ground in our own country. That's how we address the national debt problem without having silly debates about cutting Social Security or Medicare for seniors. That will not happen on my watch, but we will have a sensible approach to actually taking on the national deficit that's going to take a CEO and an outsider, and I think someone from the next generation to actually get that job done. And I think that's what's different about me versus any other candidate in this race.
Vivek, there are a lot of people concerned about the border. It used to be Texas and Arizona always bore the brunt of it, but now every state is a border state. Every community is a border state. Even Democrats are crying uncle on their own policies. What are the first reactions you would take as president to tighten up border security?
Well, immediately I will send our troops to the border. Instead of using our own troops to protect against an invasion of somebody else's border, let's use our own military to defend against our own southern border and, if necessary, our northern border, too. But the best and easiest border policy, you know what it is? Stop creating the incentives for illegal migrants to actually come here in the first place. This is something that many Democrat governors and presidents are guilty of, but some Republicans too. I want to end any funding for sanctuary cities, end foreign aid to Central America and Mexico until they've dealt with their side of this border crisis. end. I mean, even certain Republican governors, this is shameful, have created in-state tuition rates for illegal immigrants to this country, even as Americans from neighboring states would have to pay three times that tuition to go to college. That doesn't make any sense. Put an end to this culture of lawlessness where we reward people who break the law. And then the biggest one where I've gone further than any Republican in this race with detail is ending birthright citizenship for the kids of illegal immigrants. That was something the 14th Amendment never intended. I've offered a clear legal basis for why. Just as the kid of a diplomat from Mexico does not enjoy birthright citizenship, and there isn't a legal scholar in this country who disagrees with me on that, neither should somebody who crossed the border illegally from Mexico enjoy it for their kids either. And that's going to be a clear set of policies that will solve this crisis by March of 2025, as long as I'm the person who actually takes office in January of 2025.
I just want to follow up to that. Now, you've called for universally deporting illegal immigrants, have opposed any path to legal residency. But what would you say to the mothers and fathers, perhaps, who have been here for years, even decades, and
yes,
built a life for their children, right? And so tell us your answer to that, sir.
Sure. And I acknowledge that's a difficult question. I don't blame most of those families. I blame our own federal government, who has given them a wink and a nod to come to this country. So let's be very honest, and I say this as the father of two sons myself. If we're being honest, if many of us were in their shoes in Guatemala or Nicaragua or Venezuela looking for a better life for our kids and see a U.S. president who says, hey, it's okay, come on, and we basically have an open border, maybe we would have done the same thing. That's the human side we have to preserve as our in our compassion here. But we're a nation founded on the rule of law. So with compassion, with dignity, without breaking up family units, we'll take the entire family unit. Yes, we have to stand for the rule of law. We have to return them to their country of origin. Again, speaking as a father, I'd have a hard time looking my two sons in the eye and say, you have to follow the law if the government doesn't follow its own laws. And I'm the president of the United States leading that government. But for the subset of people who have shown themselves to be law-abiding citizens, make contributions to this country, they should be able to still get in line for the legal path back into this country, which we will, I think, fix in many ways. Not to say that that's just going to open the floodgates, far from it, but we'll take a rational approach. The purpose of our immigration policy should be, first and foremost, to protect the interests of Americans here in the homeland. That's the purpose of our immigration policy. And so the amnesty system has been badly abused. We're granting amnesty to people who were never really undergoing political persecution. And that's going to change on my watch. I will do it with compassion. I will do it with respect and dignity for every human being involved. But we have to stand for the rule of law without compromise.
Wow, that's a man that has a lot to say, and he says it pretty succinctly. Pretty impressive interview. We're going to take a commercial break. One more to go. Governor Doug Burgum from North Dakota. We're going to talk about rural and farm issues, something that often doesn't get talked about. We'll be right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back, America. And again, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for spending some of it with us. I want to wrap up this presidential interview series with a segment from one of our underdogs in the presidential primary. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum is being topped by former President Donald Trump everywhere, including in his home state, by a 4-1 margin. But you know what? It hasn't stopped from talking on the campaign trail about some important issues, energy independence among them, as well as protecting our farmland. Have a listen. Sir, I want to talk about an issue that almost never gets discussed in the national media. Rural America has so many challenges ahead of it right now. You have foreigners buying up farmland. You have healthcare access that's really spread out very thin in rural areas. You've got the price of diesel making everything from the pickup truck to the tractor a lot more expensive. Give us your assessment of what's going on in rural America and what policies you would do to address their needs.
Well, I can tell you one place where rural America is doing great, and that's in my home state. We've got the highest GDP of any Republican-led state in the nation. We have got the highest workforce participation of any state in the nation, across 70%. We've got among the lowest unemployment. Our population is growing. It's getting younger. People are, you know, building families. Our cities are thriving. So our education scores are among the highest SAT median scores in the nation. So we've got a lot going on. But that's not to say we don't have challenges. But having grown up in a small town and leading a state and having, you know, built a global company with kids from small towns, I really understand it. And I know from being on the ground in Iowa, New Hampshire, everything you're saying, John, is absolutely true. I mean, again, you mentioned just diesel. I mean, diesel is part of what rural America runs on. And whether you're a lobsterman in New Hampshire or a farmer in Iowa, they'd all like to be getting 20% off on their diesel tomorrow. But no, I mean, our sanctions turned Russia into China's discount gas station. So China's getting, you know, discounted oil and gas, but not Americans. But it's a challenge. One of the things is a challenge is healthcare and healthcare services in rural areas. But we've come up with innovative ways, with the disease of addiction. There weren't enough addiction counselors. We created a program in our state where now we have over 1,000 peer support specialists. They get paid more if the clients they work with get a place to live, get a driver's license, and get a job. So we've got incentives. Okay. And when I say lived experience, they may actually have come out of the criminal justice system with a felony because they ended up as a felon because of a nonviolent drug charge. But we in North Dakota, we understand that addiction's a brain disease and that we have to address it like a healthcare problem and that we've got people helping people. So there's a lot of ways where we've lowered the cost, improved the services, created jobs for folks. And so we've got a lot to say. We've got a Main Street initiative in our state too, where we're focusing on smart infrastructure, vibrant downtowns, workforce infrastructure. And again, even in rural areas, one of the biggest challenges is childcare. And we came up with innovative programs to support women entrepreneurs to make sure that those people that want to work have access to affordable, high quality and accessible and safe childcare for their families. And so when we do that, that's one of the ways that we've been able to achieve the workforce challenge, which our whole nation is a challenge. But we've got college educated women that want to work. Let's make sure that they've got the infrastructure to be able to do that for them and their families.
Innovation at work. That's
yes.
Going on now.
Excellent. Governor, hundreds of AMAC members submitted questions for this interview. AMAC is the conservatives' alternative to AARP. We have a great question from Nikki Coletti in Glendale, Arizona. And she asks you, how would you rectify the national debt and would you bring oil independence back to the United States?
Well, great question, Nikki. And yeah, the debt is such a big number that it's hard for people to get their head around when we throw out numbers like, $33.5 trillion. But I was looking the other day, if I was going to pay each of you a dollar every second, and I just started picking off a dollar every second, it would take me almost 32,000 years to hand you $1 trillion.
That puts it in perspective.
I mean, it's like even that is like, wow. I mean, 32,000 years is hard to get your head around. I mean, this is like almost like geologic time, but these are just massive numbers. But we have a big economy, and one of the ways that we can get that debt taken care of is we've got to get our economy sprinting instead of crawling. It's crawling right now, and it needs to be sprinting. So high growth, we can reduce federal spending for sure. In North Dakota, when I became governor, we cut 27% out of the general fund. Not slowed growth, not grew a little less. No, we actually took a number and made it lower, 27% lower on spending. and never, every train still left on time. And how did we do that? Well, part of it's because my background, I mean, I'm not a politician. I mean, I was a business leader and had 30 plus years of experience in the tech business. I mean, in that last debate, I was the only one on stage that has been making payroll since my mid-20s. I'm the only one that's created thousands and thousands of high-paying jobs. And when you do that, and you're in the software business where there's no tariffs and there's not subsidies. I mean, the part of the software business I was in, it was just like raw competition. You had to be better, faster, and cheaper the next day. Bringing that mentality to government, you can take out all kinds of costs out of government. Every single job and every single agency at the state and federal level, there's 10 to 20% of what those well-meaning team members are asked to do that adds no value to any citizen, and they know it. So it becomes mind-numbing, soul-sucking work. To do this. So back on Nikki's question, I mean, one of the things that is crazy, we've got this big deficit right now, and America has 240 million acres of federal land. Theodore Roosevelt, the father of modern conservation, put that land away and specifically said for the benefit and the use of the American people. That is on our balance sheet. The largest landowner in America is actually America. The largest mineral owner in America, it's not an oil company, it's America. And whether that's rare earth minerals, whether it's uranium for nuclear, whether it's oil and gas, the largest is the United States. And the Biden administration wants to shut it down and say that asset is off limits. We're going to buy it all from our enemies. And guess what? They don't produce it as cleanly as we do. If you cared about the environment, you would want to have every ounce of liquid fuels. You'd want to have every electron of electricity. You'd want everything produced here in America because we produce it cleaner, safer, and better than anyone else. When we try to shut down the U.S. energy industry, it does not reduce demand. It just displaces supply. It takes American supply and gives it to some foreign entity who is not operating with the same goals. China is the largest polluter in the world. United States is taking more CO2 out of the air than any country on the planet. Why would we shift our future towards all EVs? Why would we subsidize 500,000 charging stations and subsidize EV cars and then buy our batteries from China, who controls 85% of the rare earth minerals, and then they're the ones that are now running their economy on coal? They're opening up a coal plant every week. So for Nikki's question, yes, energy, it's not just energy independence, it's energy dominance. Because with energy dominance, then we're supplying ourselves and all of our allies. That helps push back on these dictators. It stabilizes the world. It lowers inflation. It brings manufacturing jobs back. It does all of that. And again, I mean, just another example of the craziness where the Biden administration, at the time of the Russian invasion, we were importing 400,000 barrels of oil a day into New England of dirty Russian heating oil. Why were we doing that? Because you can't, under the Biden administration in the state of New York, you can't get a permit for a pipeline from natural gas from Pennsylvania up into New England. New Hampshire, people in New Hampshire, 41% are still heating their homes with heating oil. Just right away, if you care about the environment, let's switch that over to, you know, clean natural gas. Let's just do that. But we can't get it done because the people that want to save the environment block the pipeline. And when they block the pipeline, then we start buying from Russia.
All right, folks, that brings our hour to a close. A big thank you to all the candidates for spending such quality time with us. And a big thank you for you for spending some of your holiday here with Real America's Voice. God bless you. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back tomorrow with regular programming. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-200. G-O-L-D, gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, or gold. Or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.